This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and we are going to be continuing our series on immigration, in particular, Know Your Rights, on as it relates to immigration. We're going to be focusing on sanctuary cities across the country, including in Southern California, as well as nationally. And the Trump administration is seeking changes in the visa program. It is being reported that it will discourage the hiring of low-wage foreign workers, according to the New York Times. And of course, this is related to the H-1B visas. Meanwhile, Los Angeles is responding to the Trump travel ban, as reported in the Los Angeles Times, by the Department of Tourism launching an advertising campaign with, quote, "Everyone is welcome." Well, let me welcome our guest, Emily Robinson, who is the co-director, clinical attorney of the Loyola Immigrant Justice Clinic of Loyola Law School. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Today, we're going to be focusing in our series here on sanctuary and the state of sanctuary cities. Explain to our audience what a sanctuary city means.
So it's a little difficult because there is no formal definition of a sanctuary city. Some cities do have their own laws in place. States do as well, that have kind of formed this definition for their individual jurisdictions. But the sentiment of a sanctuary city is more or less to not allocate state resources for the enforcement of immigration. Essentially, we have a separation of state and federal powers and jurisdictions, and it's important to ensure that states have autonomy in protecting their citizens and enforcing their local laws. So when we talk about sanctuary, it can mean many different things. I know that here I practice in California, and with SB 54, we've been looking into just limiting information sharing, basically putting a prohibition on offering up certain pieces of information to allocate state resources for federal immigration enforcement.
Right. And to just set part of the context of this discussion here, we do have our clip ready now. Jeff Sessions was at the U.S.-Mexico border, and chilling words from him. And of course, in immigrant communities across the United States, there's a lot of fear. Let us hear from Jefferson Sessions, who has had a history of racism. Coretta Scott King actually spoke out, wrote a letter against him being appointed as a federal judge some decades ago, and that letter was not allowed to be read on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Elizabeth Warren, who read the letter, was censored. Quite a history there. Jefferson Sessions, let's hear what he had to say.
Criminal aliens and the coyotes and the document forgers seek to overthrow our lawful system of immigration. So let's stop here for a moment. When we talk about MS-13 and the cartels, what do we mean? We mean international criminal organizations that turn cities and suburbs into war zones, that rape and kill innocent civilians, and who profit by smuggling poison and other human beings across our borders. Depravity and violence are their calling cards, including brutal machete attacks, even beheadings. They threaten the very integrity of our nations in our hemisphere. It is here on this sliver of land, on this border, where we first take our stand. It is a direct threat to our legal system and to our peace and prosperity.
So the U.S. Attorney General basically issuing what is policy of the Trump administration on the U.S.-Mexico border. And let us now return to our guest, co-director, clinical attorney, Loyola Immigrant Justice Clinic of Loyola Law School, Emily Robinson. Emily, in hearing those words, you know, one could well understand the fear and concern in immigrant communities, but also the kind of whipping up of fear that immigrants somehow are these horrible, violent people, although the statistics show that that is indeed not the case. So that means that there is an increasing need, I think, of sanctuary in terms of churches or as well as cities. For example, let's use Los Angeles as an example, implementing a sanctuary in Los Angeles. And what would that mean for people who want to seek sanctuary?
Well, so there are a few different things in play in Los Angeles right now. A lot of religious entities have kind of started a movement to offer up safe spaces. Unfortunately, there is no way for a church or any other institution to truly keep federal immigration enforcement from doing their job if they do have a judicially executed warrant for an individual. But I think what goes
so that means that they can enter a church, right? I mean, immigration authorities can enter a church, even though, let's say, the priest minister of that church says no, they have a right to enter if they've got a warrant.
Exactly. If they have a judicially executed warrant, I think the issue is that a lot of immigration officials, ICE agents, will appear at private spaces with a document that they claim is an immigrant, but is actually, is a warrant for the search and seizure of an immigrant, but it's actually an ICE internal executed document that does have the person's name, perhaps their address, perhaps their photo, but it's not a judicially executed warrant. And that distinction is causing a lot of confusion for safe spaces for immigrants. And so there is a right of private spaces to keep out immigration officials if they do not have a warrant executed by a judge specifically seeking the location of an individual who is present in that space.
Given that, what are the advantages of sanctuary cities for immigrant communities or even sanctuary churches?
I think the benefit is creating a sense of trust in the community. At this point, you know, we've heard of immigrants being seized in courthouses seeking restraining orders. We've heard of immigration officials coming into dependency courts. The father who was arrested taking his child to school, this impacts public health, it impacts education and safety. And if we don't have state and local entities sticking up for their community members, it hurts all of us. And I think that there is value in the sense that there are rights to keep immigration officials out of private spaces. And there is no way for the federal government to circumvent the separation of state and federal powers. We do have the 10th Amendment. So I think that these moves by state and city jurisdictions are crucial. And a lot of this information is very sensitive. If you think about, for example, here in California, we have driver's licenses for undocumented individuals. You had to indicate on that application that you were undocumented in order to obtain that driver's license. If we're not doing things like the SB 54 provision here in California to basically limit the sharing of information, then anyone who applied for these driver's licenses has their information accessible as well as their home address. And so this will make people move, cause them to not leave homes, and all of this is very unhealthy and very scary for the immigrant community.
Also, what about how do protections as an immigrant differ depending on what country you live in? Is there any difference there in terms of how the ICE officers deal with you?
In terms of your constitutional rights here in this country, there's no difference between an American citizen and an individual who is from another country. Our constitution does not apportion rights based on your country of origin. So while immigration officials may violate individuals' constitutional rights, by being a national of another country alone, your rights are not degraded.
Yeah. And now what about this threat by the Trump administration against sanctuary cities, saying that they could lose millions in federal grant dollars if they remain a sanctuary city? How are, you know, as far as you know, what has been the response to that threat?
I think that it has had a chilling effect on cities. I think that's why Los Angeles took some time to kind of develop policies, think about where they wanted to allocate resources and the protection of their individuals residing in the state who are undocumented. It's a big deal. We have funding that for programs like education and health, and this not only impacts our undocumented community, but a lot of indigent communities and communities needing essential services. So it's not when these threats are made, it's not a decision to become a sanctuary city that can be made without a lot of thoughtfulness and structure and policy. And I think on the part of California, a lot of consulting with council, thinking about whether or not any policies do violate 1373, are we going to actually violate federal law, or are we working within the rights as the 10th Amendment provide us for separation of state and federal powers? And I know that in California, there has been a lot of thought around this because there's so much need for federal funding. However, you can't just strip states of federal funding when these provisions and limitations were not indicated in the initial granting of federal funds. And I think that's going to be a big legal debate that we're going to see coming down the pipeline.
Right. And for people who want to get more information about sanctuary, they're just to become better informed, what should they do? I know that some people, and there's been a call too for individual people to house or provide sanctuary to the degree that they can, and even individual homes. I don't know if you can say anything about that, but for people who do want to find out more, what should they do?
Well, for us here at the Immigrant Justice Clinic, we are at Dolores Mission Church every Wednesday from 2:30 to 5, giving free consultations so that people know their rights and whether or not they can access immigration relief. We also do that at Homeboy Industries on Friday from 2 to 5. And individuals can call and make appointments with us. It doesn't matter their immigration issue. Of course, it does have to be an immigration legal issue. A lot of local nonprofits also have open intake days. I know that Caresen is another local nonprofit that can be called. Chirla also has opportunities for intake. I do encourage anyone who is undocumented or concerned about the immigration status of themselves or their family members to seek a legal consultation so they understand not only their rights when encountering immigration officials, but also do they have the opportunity to apply for anything or have legal relief. And if they can, we should start taking steps in that direction. In terms of rights of churches, we do have coalitions, immigrant integration task forces. I think that any religious affiliation should contact different organizing bodies. I know each religion kind of has their own organizing tables, but there have been conversations about their rights and how they can work together, how they can extend protections to community members who also want to open their homes for sanctuary. So I think the first step for any individual community member would be to speak to someone in their church, try to get more information, and for churches themselves to contact the networks that they meet in with other religious officials to think about aligned policies, as there is strength in numbers and consistency in policies. I think that's really important for us to have definition and not just be acting without real thought behind this kind of sanctuary concept. But most importantly, people need to keep listening to programs like this, knowing their rights, not letting immigration officials in their home. It's very important to, once you open the door, to understand that immigration officials can question everyone in a home. So knowing your rights, attending Know Your Rights presentations couldn't be more important right now.
Right. Well, Emily Robinson, we know also that for our listeners in other cities, they could certainly get in touch with ACLU, the local immigrants rights organizations, the National Lawyers Guild, to get more information on sanctuary and about Know Your Rights. Emily Robinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.